In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thank you so much for joining us and have a very, very happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Kelly.
Thanks.
And we're out. See you later, guys.
Let's meet the crew. I'm Kelly Lawler. I'm a TV critic. And my favorite title of an M. Night Shyamalan movie is The Lady in the Water, because it low-key sounds like a King Arthur remake. And I was disappointed when the movie came out.
And I'm Brian Truitt. I'm a film critic. And my favorite title is The Happening, which is a really movie, but a kind of money title.
If this is your first time listening to us, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership are available every Friday, and you can subscribe to us for free, $0, not a single penny, on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to listen to your favorite podcasts. If you are a regular listener, you'll notice that my name is not Brett Molina. He couldn't be with us today, but we are sending him love and also angry emojis, because why didn't he prioritize us over other things? And if you happen to be on Apple Podcasts, you should leave us a review that does not contain angry emojis. When you do that, you're helping other fans of geek culture find us. And as a thank you, we will read your review on the show and shout out your username or your real name if you decide to leave it. And it's really awesome. And you become famous and best friends with us. It's really just how it all works.
You want to be our friends. We're like YouTube influencers, but not as annoying.
Don't forget, along with leaving a review, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. For the whole show, we're at Mothership Pod, or you can also send an email to mothershippod@usatoday.com. But let's get on to the main topic. Today, we're very scared and very disappointed to talk
about... At the same time.
The very controversial filmmaker, Mr. M. Night Shyamalan. He has a new movie out this weekend, Glass, which combines characters from Unbreakable and Split. And yeah, we'll get into that. Here's a clip from it.
My bones break easily. I've had 94 breaks in my life.
But you have an extraordinary IQ.
This is not a cartoon. This is the real world.
No way.
And yet, some of us still don't die with bullets. Some of us can still bend steel. I've been waiting for the world to see that we exist.
So that was from Glass. It stars James McAvoy, Bruce Willis, Samuel L. Jackson. It was highly anticipated, I would say. One of the more highly anticipated Shyamalan movies. Even after he had been highly anticipated and highly beloved and then disappointed us, he came back. And now I think he's disappointed us again. Right, Brian? You've seen it.
Kind of, yeah. Because there was Unbreakable, which was in 2000, which was kind of like this kind of secret superhero origin story that you really didn't understand really what was going on until the very end. One of his best reveals for me. And it's kind of one of my favorite movies because of that. And it was before like superhero movies became a thing. So it kind of tapped into a storytelling that wasn't popular at the time, but it set the groundwork for what came after it in a kind of cool way. And then there was Split, which was a 2017 kidnap thriller with James McAvoy, who plays 23 and then 24 different personalities, that you didn't know it was a secret sequel to Unbreakable until the very end when Bruce Willis shows up, you know, in a diner at the very, very end. And then this kind of like takes place a few weeks after that. You have Elijah Price, a.k.a. Mr. Glass, who's Samuel L. Jackson's character. And then there's David Dunn, which is Bruce Willis' character. And then you have the many personalities of Kevin Wendell Crumb, which is James McAvoy's character. And then they all get put in a hospital. One flew over the cuckoo's nest style.
and good things, bad things come?
Yeah. Can't really get too much into it because it is very spoilery and very twisty and everything. Two big swerves. One took me out of the movie totally because it was like this kind of like weird last minute thing that just didn't make any sense. And then there was another one that made it a little bit better, but not really. I mean, it was just, it's weird because Unbreakable was this kind of like comic book thriller type thing. It was somber. It had its own vibe. It was great. Then you have Split, which is kind of like more of a horror movie because it's just like, you know, it all takes place in like kind of a basement. And the, you know, and the antagonist has all these different personalities and he's keeping young girls in cages. So that's a different vibe. And then you have this thing, which is, again, a third different vibe. So it's almost like you have characters that are cool to see together, but they don't quite fit together. In those other two movies, they were one thing on a superficial level, but they were about something much deeper. Whereas this one doesn't kind of have that. There is that kind of a deeper thing, but it's not nearly as satisfying as the other two, which were well-crafted, so you really didn't know what you were watching until the very end.
Do you think your negative opinion of this movie is more because you thought the quality was bad, full stop, or because you were disappointed that it wasn't better because you had high expectations?
I didn't have any expectations, really, because the thing about M. Night Shyamalan movies is there are, you know, he doesn't do sequels. He does, like, these self-contained stories. Love them or not, they're just one thing. So Unbreakable was a fantastic one thing. Split was a fantastic one thing. It was cool to see Bruce Willis at the end because you're like, oh, this takes place in the same Philadelphia as Unbreakable. Oh, cool. But then you go farther. Then you're like, oh, well, no, this is a whole trilogy now. And, you know, so on one level, you're like, okay, I would like to see kind of like where Samuel Jackson is and where Bruce Willis is at this point. But then on another level, like, no, because I was fine with that story. And I was fine with his other story. But now we're going to put them all together. We're going to throw Sarah Paulson in as like a foil for everybody, even the audience, because there's a meta level to this, which is kind of interesting, but it doesn't quite work either. So it's just too much kind of going on. It doesn't know what it wants to be because it wants to be kind of like this One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest thing, but also is trying to be this like comic book superhero thing. And is trying to be like, you know, this big action movie smackdown thing. And then it just ends up being something, totally else. So there's just too much kind of going on with it. And that's kind of what's disappointing because Unbreakable is a thing. Split is a thing. And like Sixth Sense is a thing. And like he does things. And this is just like too much of it.
Where would you rank Glass in the Shyamalan canon?
I don't know. I mean, it's just like it's in the middle somewhere because you got Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs. I love Signs. You know, a Village. A lot of people didn't like The Village. I'm a fan. The Visit was great. And then, but you also have like Lady in the Water, which was kind of Happening was terrible. Airbender was terrible. You have a lot of terrible things. So it's not terrible. It's pretty well made for what it is. And like James McAvoy is friggin' amazing. Because he plays like 20 different people in this, where he played like 9 different identities in Split. He plays like 20 here, which, fun fact, he actually played 23, but 3 didn't make the final cut. That's just for you podcast listeners. Bruce Willis is fine. Samuel Jackson's just cool. You know, Sarah Paulson's character is interesting. What happens with her, which is spoilery, I didn't love. But it's like mid. It's just like, it's not bad, it's not good. It's just kind of like there.
All right, so speaking of his whole canon, I mean, you probably know who he is. If you don't, well, a little background. He's a director. Oh, my God. He is responsible for movies like Unbreakable and Split and Glass, like we were just talking about, but also The Sixth Sense, The Village, Signs, some less regarded movies like The Last Airbender, The Happening, Devil.
Which was good. And he had his big to-do. Everybody started hating his stuff, and he kind of like fell off the face of the earth. And then Devil was kind of like his way, a little way back, because he wrote that. And it's not great, but it's a cool concept that he works with. But sorry, go ahead.
And yeah, he's kind of a unique figure in Hollywood, I feel like, because he made a few movies before The Sixth Sense, but when he... The Sixth... Doing that again. He made a few movies before The Sixth Sense, but when that movie premiered in 1999, it was a phenomenon, to say the least. In fact, I was never interested in seeing The Sixth Sense in 1999. I won't tell you how old I was, but I was hiding under covers. And I have learned the ending of The Sixth Sense so many times since then. It's unbelievable. Not just through 51st States, the movie, which in fact spoils the ending of The Sixth Sense multiple times.
It was kind of the first meme. Yeah, honestly, really.
I see dead people.
Yeah. I can't imagine that movie like in a social media age.
Yeah.
I just can't.
You know, I think about when I read the sixth Harry Potter book, which is the one where Dumbledore died. Spoiler alert for a book that came out a decade ago. But even then, before we really had memes, there were all these things that were trying to get you to click that said Dumbledore dies on page two, whatever, right? Like if The Sixth Sense had come out, they'd be like, spoiler alert again from a movie from 1999. Bruce Willis is dead. Bruce Willis is dead. It was a really successful movie commercially, critically, award season wise. And there was a lot of pressure on Shyamalan afterwards. And he did come up with some good follow-ups. But then things started to go downhill. Around The Village, would you say?
Kind of. I think that was when kind of like you had the split between people who dug his stuff and people who didn't like his stuff. So Unbreakable, it came at a time when people weren't really into comic books and superheroes. And it didn't do great commercially, but it had like a real cult following. Everybody was expecting like that kind of like, you know, that Bruce Willis moment again, because it was the two of them together. It was, you know, it was Knight's next movie after that, and he was bringing back Bruce Willis. So everybody was hoping for that, like, big swerve. There was reveals, but there was never a big swerve. So I don't think it was a commercial success. Signs did really, really well because his version of an alien invasion story was really, really interesting because it was intimate. It wasn't really about everything that was happening outside. It was what was happening within one family's walls. The Village was kind of like the breaking point. I dug what he was doing with The Village. A lot of people weren't because the swerve wasn't what they wanted. He didn't mean to, I don't think, but he started the kind of like what we know now is kind of like the, you know, that spoiler culture and that kind of like, you know, what Lost kind of like pervade was just like, well, I didn't like the swerve, so I don't like this movie.
Yeah.
Whereas it's like, you can't see the forest for the trees and be like, okay, well, this is what he was trying to do with this. It's not about the swerve. It's about kind of the whole story he was telling. So I think that was kind of like the demarcation line. And then you have Lady in the Water, which,
yeah,
again, kind of got what he was going for. Just the execution wasn't great. The Happening was, you know, that was a POS.
Even Mark Wahlberg, who starred in The Happening, has called it a POS.
And probably Knight would too. I mean, and again, he comes up with these concepts that are great. It's just the execution doesn't kind of, I mean, you're just like, plants are trying to kill us. Plants are kind of pissed off that we've ruined the climate. Okay, well, that kind of makes sense. It was not executed well, and it was horribly acted, and it just kind of doesn't work. And then it's just like, then you have The Last Airbender, which was bad. After
Don't
Earth.
Don't get me started on The Last Airbender, what he did to one of the most amazing stories ever written for children. Truly.
Yeah, he should stay away from IP. Just do your own stuff. And then After Earth was kind of that was a mess.
That, to me, feels like a movie that was made for Netflix a few years too early.
Yeah.
A Will Smith vanity
project.
With
his son.
With his son that was super dumb and super expensive and people probably only watched to hate watch. I bet if it had premiered on Netflix, they would have been like, more views than Bird Box.
So then he kind of went away for a while. And then Jason Blum, he kind of like was Knight's way back because Knight was making all these kind of like big kind of studio productions that were kind of working out. So Jason Blum's like, here's $5 million, go make something. And he's had a career resurgence with doing that. The Visit was just, it's all about kids staying with their grandparents. And are they really the grandparents? You know, who are these people that you don't know, these old people you don't know, are they really, your grandparents, or is there something else? It's a simple concept. It's a very kid concept. Just it's like grandma and grandpa are kind of creepy. It's these simple concepts and, you know, not much money, but he does it in a really kind of cool way. And then that led to Split, which was, again, it was just like very simple, crazy guy kidnaps, you know, some young teenage girls. But then the dude has like, you know, more 24 personalities. And it's one of those things where, you know, you don't have a lot of pressure. You can just kind of do whatever story you feel like telling. You don't have like, oh, what am I going to do with, you know, $100 million? What am I going to do with all these A-list actors sitting here? You know, you just have James McAvoy playing 23 people. You know, I think there's something simplistic about that.
Yeah.
And I think it works for him. I think Glass, the story itself is kind of fine. And, you know, you do have A-list people in it. But it's just, it doesn't find the magic of like an Unbreakable or Signs. It doesn't have that kind of like little nugget that everything springs from. It's like you kind of like, you have a bunch of nuggets and then you're like watering them to see what happens.
Yeah.
Seeds rather than nuggets there.
I tend to think that most artists can produce some of their best work with limitations. I think that applies to people like Joss Whedon, for instance, who, when he got into comic books where he could do anything, went off the rails. That applies to lots of directors. George Lucas, who start off with small budgets and then get bigger budgets. It's, you know, you think about the famous story about the shark and Jaws. Sometimes art comes from external factors, and the way that artists respond to those can create something new. So, yeah, I totally feel like that's what made Split so good. And
it wasn't any other movie. It was its own little thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't an Unbreakable sequel. I wonder what people would have thought if he'd put it. It's like, oh, this is an Unbreakable sequel. Bruce Willis and Samuel Jackson aren't in it, but it's an Unbreakable sequel. I think people would have, you know, would have thrown fire at it. But because it was this weird little horror thriller with James McAvoy, James McAvoy and Betty Buckley are the only people you know in that movie.
And, well, Anya Taylor-Joy was on her way up.
Yeah. I mean, people would have signed her in The Witch, but that is it. And no one saw The Witch, which is a great movie, by the way. Go see that.
It's on one of the streaming services now.
It'll freak your ass out, but go see it.
But yes, with Split, I think the cool thing is that without a lot of money, he focused on James McAvoy's performance to bring in, like, the special effects element. You have to focus on that because that's all you can necessarily afford to use to scare people. I even noticed, back to your point about if people would have freaked out if he called it an Unbreakable sequel, they didn't even use his name in the advertisements because I think he's got a little bit of a bad cachet, or at least he had. Then Split came out. The Visit was good, and I think a certain number of people liked it, but it wasn't like a huge commercial hit. I think it was, you know, good enough for horror.
It made money because it was made for $5 million.
Right. But Split was a much bigger hit and a little more culturally effective, so more people had heard of it even if they hadn't seen it and, like, knew the concept. So that is what I think brought him back. And that is why so many reviews I saw of Glass, I think, were more, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. Because I think people thought Split would be part of an upward trajectory. But, you know, Shyamalan does not particularly follow any rules or paths already established in Hollywood.
I think it was, and it still is. And he makes his own rules, for better or for worse. You know, he's an artist like that. I think, you know, kind of like, but our greatest artists are that. Our greatest artists, you know, make big swings and either hit a home run or a strikeout. But, you know, at least, you know, sometimes the strikeouts look pretty damn good for what they are. And I think that's going to be him. I mean, I think, you know, as it's not The Happening. Happening's a piece of shit, and I think everybody knows that it is. It's not good. Concept's okay, not good movie. Whereas Split, it is a well-made movie. You know, like, James McAvoy owns that shit. It is cool seeing Samuel Jackson, and Sarah Paulson is, you know, she's good in everything. There are times in that movie that are great. But it's just overall, it's just kind of like, it doesn't work. And then he goes and does something else. I mean, I think that's, you know, it's just like, at this point probably in his life, you know, Unbreakable. I went to the M. Night Shyamalan-a-thon at the Alamo, which is like all three of them together, which is an interesting way to see those. And I do recommend it, you know, even seeing Glass as part of the whole trilogy that way. And, you know, he was talking in a Q&A, he was talking about how, like, you know, after when Unbreakable came out, like, he was depressed on his couch. So young with Sixth Sense and just having the kind of, like, you're the new Spielberg, which he was talked about by, like, everybody. And he was the one in Hollywood Wunderkind. And when you're in the second movie, no one goes to see it the first weekend because they don't, you know, superheroes aren't a thing yet. 10 years later, that would have been a box office success. In 2000, that was before, you know, the Spider-Man movies and X-Men and everything. And, you know, people weren't ready for that. So I think he's just one of those guys who's like way ahead of the curve about everything. So I, you know, but he's going to, at this point, probably in his life, he's going to go take those big swings and, you know, he's just going to do them with $5 or $10 million instead of like 50 or 60.
Yeah. So speaking of the big swings, Brian, what would you call your favorite of his movies?
I think Signs. I think Signs really does it for me. My rankings might be up. I can't remember when my rankings are going up. If I go to life.usatoday.com now, it might be there.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Go to Brian's Twitter.
It is an M. Night Shyamalan twist. Are my rankings up or not? You might have to wait till Monday. Anyway, I think Signs is number one just because of what he really does with that movie. And you know,
do you
it
like
is,
the ending?
I don't hate the ending. I know you hate the ending. I know it's interesting. Everybody hates the ending now, and no one hated the ending like, you know, back in the day. I don't feel like, and maybe that's kind of like a social media thing. I don't know. But
I have the weird experience of never having watched them when they came out because I'm bad with horror, as I've talked about on this podcast before, and watching a whole bunch in the past 2 weeks for this podcast. And so I think maybe I would have thought about the ending differently. I also had heard that the ending sucked, so I really didn't have a very good, you know, entry point into that film.
For me, it works because it ties into everything else that has come before it. And it's not, again, it's not the greatest ending. I mean, it's not really a swerve either. It's just kind of like, in a way, I guess we can't spoil it. It doesn't really matter. But it's just like, it is an alien invasion film. The way they introduce the alien is fan-frigging-tastic. The way it is, you know, you first see it and the way he, like, you know, captures people's looks and just everything about that is just so amazing. Kind of wish you never saw it again. If you don't like the way War of the Worlds ends, you're not going to like the ending of this. But for me, it worked because it worked emotionally. I understand why a lot of people don't, because they're less like, well, that's stupid. In the early 2000s, seeing that in the theater and not knowing what the hell was going to happen, it was fantastic. I saw The Sixth Sense in a theater, not knowing anything about that movie. That doesn't happen anymore. And no. It's you know, kind of going on a tangent here. I think he's probably one of the last filmmakers who benefits from that. Because now, I mean, you have, you know, people saw parts of Rian Johnson's Last Jedi, or people saw parts of J.J. Abrams' Force Awakens. We knew kind of what was going to happen. Having a Bruce Willis movie where you don't know anything really about that movie, and it pulls the rug out from you, like Sixth Sense does. I mean, that's just not going to happen anymore.
That's totally how I saw all of these things. So, you know, I watched, which ones did I watch? I watched The Sixth Sense finally.
But you knew the kind of the surprise, the, oh, you know, kind of, but yeah. your expectations were colored because of that in a way, probably.
Yeah. So I knew the twist in The Sixth Sense 100%. And I had seen bits and pieces of it on cable before. So I did find myself watching for Bruce Willis's actions to make sure that it all added up in the end without even really trying to do that. We have analytical minds as humans, and so I wanted to, like, make sure it all worked, which reminds me of that quote from Parks and Rec when Ben is like, I went back to watch the third season of Fringe Freddy plot holes. There weren't any. It was a little less scary to me, I think, because of that. I'm getting better, too. I feel like I'm really getting better, guys. So, yeah, I watched Sixth Sense. We watched Unbreakable, Doug Unbreakable, and we watched Split, which I was the most scared to see, knowing that it was sort of the most classic horror setup, and it definitely scared me the most. But I really liked it, and I really liked James McAvoy. I really like Anya Taylor-Joy. I thought she was really great in it. I thought they did more with her than a lot of times victims of horror movies get to do.
Well, they connected the victim to the assailant.
Yeah.
You know, in an interesting way where at the end, you know, just kind of like it kind of stuck to a kind of a horror movie or thriller structure to much of it. You saw little bits and pieces of her flashbacks. You didn't really know where it was going, which you were kind of led to believe that, you know, she kind of knows what to do here. And she's smarter than she looks, and you're kind of led to believe that she could be like kind of Ripley her way out of this situation or something. But then there's a twist. Instead, they connect on a level where you weren't expecting. And that's the beauty of that movie, because you're like, didn't you just get the theme of the movie in one, you know, like two-second scene, and it makes the entire movie.
Yeah. The biggest twist in that movie, this is not serious, please don't take me seriously. The biggest twist in that movie is they made James McAvoy not hot. But yes, then the only other one I actually have, because again, he's not my bag and I was just trying to do as much as I can for this podcast. This is the only one I ever saw in theaters, The Last Airbender, which is, in my opinion, even though I have only seen a few, his worst movie ever made. At least the worst I've ever seen. I have such anger at this movie because of what it did. I have alleviated some of it now that Netflix is making another live-action adaptation of Avatar The Last Airbender. If you've never seen it, please go watch it. It is an amazing anime-inspired television show from Nickelodeon from the early aughts about a world where certain gifted people, they're called benders, are able to control the four elements, fire, water, earth, and air. And there's one person who can control all four, and he's called the Avatar. And there's a war raging and lots of great backstory. It's really a sort of Lord of the Rings size epic. And it was inspired by anime, drawn in anime fashion. Smart enough that I watched it mostly as a teen and then as an adult, but simple enough that kids can follow and get really into this kind of storytelling. The movie is horribly whitewashed, a movie completely inspired by Asian culture. The only...
Which is interesting for an Indian director.
Yeah. The only major Asian cast member is the villain, who's played by Dev Patel. One of the things that bothered me the most is that he's such a visual director. You know, you have to be to do horror. But he turned the bending, which is so cool to watch in the animation, into essentially bad dancing. Anyone who had never seen the cartoon and looked at what bending was would probably think it was like the dumbest shit they've ever seen. They just are like waving their arms around and they don't really animate the air enough. The water looks like flaccid, for lack of a better term. It was just dumb. And it's such a bummer because it's so cool. You know what that could be. It's one of the, you know, I would never say something ruined my childhood, but this is the adaptation that I think of all the things I've seen that have disappointed me that made me the angriest. And it's just a bummer. I think it wasn't in his wheelhouse. And, you know, I don't think he'll return to other people's property anytime soon.
Well, why would, I mean, it's just like, it's a waste to put him on. There's plenty of directors who are good for like cash grabs or like make an adaptation of this and make it not suck. Where, you know, they don't have to do much work. It is a waste to do like the guy who does The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable and make him do a Last Airbender movie.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he needed the cash. I'm not, you know, who knows? Or maybe, you know, just kind of he was in a funk and he needed something to get him out. Who knows? Only he can answer that. But it's just like for me, I mean, it's a waste to put somebody that thoughtful with his stories and that creative and innovative to do that.
Yeah. What's your least favorite, we'll go with, of his films?
Oh, I think it's The Happening. So The Last Airbender, I think, was always going to be bad. So it's like, I don't think that even counts. It's probably got to be The Happening just because the acting is so terrible. And the concept is interesting-y. It's badly executed and it doesn't make sense. And it's just, it starts so interesting, too, because it's just like you have people falling off, you know, jumping off houses and just falling to their deaths. And it's almost like pre-Bird Box. It almost kind of like it's kind of almost that Bird Box thing where you're just like people commit suicide and you don't know why they're doing it, which is a really kind of cool concept because it's just like, that's freaky as hell. When you see like he has that one scene where you look up, where somebody's looking up and you just like bodies are falling, you know, coming at you. And that is so creepy. It's so creepy. But then the rest of the movie is just utter crap. And it's just like, but you have to wonder, it's just like you started out so well. How did it go so bad? There's parts of it that are just, you know, insane cool. Just a few things. And then it just like the rest of it is just like, you know, what happened? What happening? What's happening?
What's happening?
That's when I want him to do like have him do What's Happening, like the reboot of the old sitcom. I want to see that. That's an IP I will let him do.
Okay, quickly before we wrap up, what is your favorite twist?
I mean, I think it's got to be The Sixth Sense, I think, because
I don't think there's a comparison.
It's the ultimate twist. other than you know, Vader and Luke. I don't know if there's any other twist that is like that. That makes you go watch everything else just to see how you did that.
Yeah. I agree. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week for the Shyamalan on the Mothership. But now we want to hear from you. Did you see Glass? Did you like it? What's your favorite M. Night movie? You can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at Kalawls, K-L-A-W-L-S.
I'm at Brian Truitt.
And Brett Molina is at BrettMolina23. And don't forget, you can also email us. Our address is mothershippod@usatoday.com. But that will do it for this week. We had a lot of fun, and thank you so much for listening. Special thanks to our pilot/producer of The Mothership this week, Shannon Green. If you like the podcast and you don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe to The Mothership on Apple Podcasts for free. And while you're there, we would really love it if you left us a review. It helps keep the podcast going. But if Apple Podcasts isn't your jam, you can also find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, many other places that air them. Until next Friday, nerds out.
Later.